live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Simply G radio show on the Simply G Media Network. Again, you can go to simplyg.com to learn more information on G.J. Reynolds, the Playful and Powerful Warrior, and also simplygmedia.com to listen to all the cool celebrity interviews, entrepreneur interviews, and author interviews. And I'm so excited to first welcome the program my co-host, G.J. Reynolds. And G.J., anytime you come on the line to do an interview with me, it's a big, big guest. So how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and as always, I'm always excited, and, you know, you just never know where this path is going to lead, and so every day I'm amazed and definitely truly blessed, and we have some excellent guests, and, you know, from all walks of life and all different types of genres and sports, as authors and musicians and, you know, TV and movie, and it's just amazing, and especially when you come across somebody that comes on the show that's been, you know, been a key person in my past. So that's pretty exciting. So let's just get right to it. Today's guest, he's been acting for 50 years, and one of my all-time favorite shows he was on, and before I share what show that is, you know, I want to give some of his other accolades. He's done different things in Hollywood, and you know, obviously, he's been a working actor for, you know, 50-plus years, and he's worked with a lot of the greats and done, you know, countless TV shows, too many to really name. He's an author. He's a developer. He's also going to talk about his upcoming project, the Macon Project. And, you know, so he played the role that most people will remember, Eddie Monster. He lived at 1313 Mockingbird Lane. It's one of my favorite all-time shows. I own every episode of The Monsters, which in so welcome to your show, Butch Patrick. How you doing, Butch?
Hey, I'm doing very well, and thank you for that very nice introduction.
So thank you very much, and again, as I share offline, thanks for all the great memories of you know, that show. As funny as it was, and Neil he called me earlier today and said, hey, you're able to do the interview? And I said, yes. And he says, well, did you watch that show? I go, yeah, I watched it. I remember watching it on black and white TV. A lot of people don't realize that show was black and white because it was black and white TV. So obviously I'm giving my age away. But it's a great show. It's, you know, transcended to different you know, John, different generations, and you know, even my kids watch it periodically, and they don't realize how old a show it is. They just think it's black and white because it's supposed to be that way, and it's cool.
You know, it's very funny that you mentioned that, because last night I was at a screening of a new print of Munster Go Home, which was the color feature that we did after the 2-year run of the black and white series. And after dinner, we went out with some people that are filmmakers, and they were really impressed with the quality of the production back then, even though it was a TV series and television. The movie version was really impressive, especially the print, because of the vivid colors. But he brought up an interesting conversation and a point about how they referred to the golden age of television as the 50s, but he felt the golden age was really the 60s, because in the 50s, it was radio shows being done in front of a camera. And in the 60s, they actually started doing television shows structured for scripts written exclusively for television. Well, I was very lucky to start working in 1960 through the 70s. Most of my work is in the 60s, which happened to be probably the best decade ever to be associated with some really good, long, you know, good shows that had great writing in its early infancy and had staying power like The Munsters.
Well, Butch, I'm a huge fan as well. I'm a little younger than G.J. I'm not going to say how old G.J. is, but he might tell you at another time. But, Butch, it was one of my favorite shows, especially Herman Munster, because I'm 6'10". I always looked up.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. 6'10", 280 pounds, former professional wrestler. But it was my favorite show of all time. When I tell my wife, I got the chance to interview you, and I remember watching The Munsters all the time, and it was such a fantastic show. Now, Butch, isn't it amazing, so many years after the show's over, how you'll never be forgotten, and just how many people just grew up watching you?
Especially you. Look at you, 6'10". You really grew up. You literally are my biggest fan. But seriously, you know, it's funny. Like you mentioned that you didn't grow up with the show originally, but that's the beauty of the show is the fact that it's multi-generational and people, grandkids, and grandparents and parents all watch it together and enjoy it. Kids that are turned on to it today, you know, it's kind of timeless, like, you know, Beatle music or something. It's very much a quality level of such that it endures, and it has great family values and good moral fiber. So people just enjoy it watching with their kids because they know that it's going to be pure entertainment and with no negativity involved.
And that's the thing, GJ. This is, again, this show, plain and simple, was any child can watch this. Any family member can watch this, GJ. And I think that's what spoke to us at that time about the safeness of watching television.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking about that, you know, just going back to that time. And, you know, it's just wholesome. And most of the shows had a powerful message that was directed to families. And even though, you know, everything happened, you know, through the monster family, that is things that regular families could, you know, understand and, yeah, you know, and definitely identify with. And that era is definitely, I agree with you, Butch, that era is definitely the number one era of television. The 70s got a little more crazy, a little more hip, but those two generations of television definitely hit home with me. So, obviously, you're on the show to talk about a little bit about what you're presently doing. And again,
sure,
again, thanks for all the great moments. And Neil did grow up because he said he wanted to be Herman Munster, and he said, "Hey, I'm gonna be taller than Herman Munster," and he is.
That's true.
So, why don't you talk a little bit about what you're doing right now? And I know I referred to the Macon Project, and
yes,
let's talk a little bit about what you're presently doing right now.
Well, the time frame is such that it actually wraps around the Munster episodes, because the 2 years I did the Munsters, before I did the show, I was living in Illinois with my grandmother. She had a apartment in this little town called Geneseo above a storefront, but she was a huge antique collector and had a lot of antiques that she needed to show off. So what she did is during the Munster period, she moved to a house in Macon, Missouri, bought this big, huge, it's like a very large Queen Anne Victorian home with two full floors, a whole basement and a whole attic. It's about, I guess, about 2,000 square foot per floor. It's pretty good size. She had this whole house furnished with all her antiques. So when I came back from the Munsters, I was in the eighth grade then, and I visited her. My sister spent more time there than I did. But every few years, maybe every 10 years or so, when I was in the Midwest, I would drive by just to visit the house, because it was just always, it was almost like a landmark in this small town that Eddie Munster lived there. So even though now I'm an adult, the house still has this Marjorie Green Street lived there, and her grandson was Eddie Munster. So about 3 years ago, I went by to visit it, and I called a friend who still lives in Macon, Missouri, and she said, "Oh," Carolyn goes, "Oh, you know, that house is vacant. Your grandma's house is in foreclosure." I told my sister about it. My sister said, "You know, that's a haunted house." And I said, "Well, nobody, maybe I wasn't listening, but this was news to me because I wasn't aware of this haunting." Then the more we talked about it, the more I was convinced of it, and I had a paranormal gentleman named Michael Lynch come in from St. Louis with his crew, put up cameras, put up sensors, and, you know, all the things you do to try to nail down entities and activity. And he said, "If we have an entity there, you know, we'll find it." And he found 13 of them, including the one that my sister sees, which is a woman in her early 30s that hovers. I guess she's seen around the stairway. That seems to be her local spot. And Michelle saw her several times in the house, and so did Grandma, apparently. I never did, and we weren't allowed to go into the basement, apparently, because that's where a lot of hauntings occurred. And when I went back as an adult a few years ago, when we did go downstairs, it was a very sort of a spooky feel to it, and you could sense the hair on the back of your neck standing up. So the thing is, this house is there. It was a family house. I'm hoping to acquire it, not only to save the house and restore it back to its original situation. But at the same time, I want to do a syndicated radio show off the property and hold a mixer maybe once or twice, you know, once every 6 weeks or so, to have fans of Paranormal Activity and Munster fans meet on the property, have like a 3-day weekend together, and also record my show while they're there. So I'm going to try to turn it into a mission control type of paranormal Munster piece of property in the Midwest.
Wow, that's really interesting, Butch, and I think that, again, definitely our listeners need to know how they're going to be able to help you out in this process, but did you always believe in paranormal activity before, Butch, or is this something new to you once you found out about the mansion?
It's reasonably new. I had a show that I was associated with about 12 or 13 years ago called Macabre Theater, and Bonnie Vent, who is the paranormal expert out of San Diego, and I would go out and do ghost segments for the show. And we went to several high-profile, high-active, you know, paranormal places like the Roosevelt Hotel and the Queen Mary and the Whaley House and Villa Montezuma and so on and so on. And through her association, she kind of explained to me how this whole thing works. Then I really started feeling comfortable in the arena that there's something going on. And most of the people in the country, if you take a survey, I'd say over half the people do believe in something like that. And so many incredible people have had sightings and ghostly, you know, it's not conflict, but they run across ghosts in their lives. That's never, not everyone can just be seeing that. There must be something to it. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing this ghost myself.
GJ, interesting what Butch deals with. He has his own, I guess, Munsters show afterwards, in a way, with talking about the mansion.
I'm definitely interested in learning more about that. And again, you asked a question about, you know, how everybody can get involved. So I definitely want to hear about that. And Macon, Missouri, I mean, I lived in Kansas City most of my adult life. And so I know where Macon has never been there. I know it's north of Columbia. So that's an interesting tidbit. So Macon, Missouri, straight north of Columbia and straight west of Hannibal.
Well, you know what's going to be very interesting about this is it's great the house is there, number one, and it's a wonderful area. It's a small town. It still has 5,000 people in it. But the fact that you'll have an entire community being sort of like involved in the show and involved in the mixers and everything that goes on in the town will be basically beneficial not only for, you know, everybody that lives there and the economy and stuff, but it'll really put it on the map. So I'm happy about that. And the bottom line is it's kind of like, someone coined the term, it's like Eddie Munster meets Andy of Mayberry in the Twilight Zone. So it's going to be a really, really cool situation where everybody in the town will be involved. I'm going to have big parties. I'm going to have big mixers. Obviously, Halloween will probably be a special time. But I'm really looking forward because a lot of my friends that I went to school with still live there. So it's a combination of a lot of good things happening to a great piece of property. And in and around Macon, there's a lot of other haunted history that will play into it as well.
Really, really interesting. GJ, so have you ever been to Macon?
I've never been to Macon. I just know where it's at. And you know, obviously my son Marcus spent a lot of time in Columbia. So, you know, I'm being a Kansas City guy. I know where some of the towns are. 5,000, I grew up in a little town of 5,000 in Kansas. So I can relate to that. So, yeah, there's a lot of these old Victorian big old homes, and I know someone can be, you know, even if they're not haunted, they look haunted. So I see where you can go with that. So where can our fans and everybody following us and everybody following you learn more information about finding and how they get involved and stay connected with you?
Well, you can see the sizzle reel on YouTube. It's just, if you just type in Butch Patrick Haunted House, it'll pop up, number one. And there's a nice interview with me and my sister and the previous owner, as well as Bonnie Vent, my paranormal expert. Then when I actually acquire, the problem with the house right now, it's between banks and it's in a foreclosure state, and it's like I have to wait for the powers that be to release the paperwork to make it available for purchase. Once that happens, it will be big news across the country, and, you know, if anybody follows me on Facebook or Twitter, we'll find out about it, but I'm sure once it happens, it'll be pretty visible to anyone that wants to follow me. And I think the best thing to do would just be to follow me on Facebook and find out what's going on with the updates.
And you'll be asking for help, Butch, once that happens, correct? To try to help in the process of raising money for it once the house is available. Is that your hope?
What I was going to do is people were talking about trying to do a TV show out of it, this and that. And I said, you know, I don't really care if a TV show ever happens. I'm buying the house because I want to make sure it doesn't get knocked down and it doesn't get wrecked and it doesn't, you know, fall into the wrong hands, number one. Number two, my friend who was actually helping me purchase the home is a radio station owner. So I was looking to do a syndicated show, and instead of living in Long Island where the stations are, I said, why don't we do this? Wouldn't it be cool to have a hook? And my hook was going to be Music from the Other Side, a paranormal hour with Butch Patrick and guests featuring music of, you know, spooky things of this nature, you know, ghostly music, or however we want to present it. You need some kind of an angle, and I thought that would be a great angle because I'm going to have people on the property who will bring in their interest in music and my interest in music and their stories and ghost stories of paranormal activity and package it into a nice 60-minute, like late-night, Saturday-night show. So that in itself is all I really want to do. But once the mixers start happening and people start coming in and I start getting 150 people or so on the property for a weekend, I'm sure a show will probably ensue. But it'll happen on my terms. Well, I'll bring my own people in. I'll shoot the footage and I'll present it and keep creative control.
Wow. Interesting for sure. And Butch, you also were talking about a book coming out soon, possibly. Is that another project in the works?
It is. It's coming together very nicely. September 24th will be the 50th anniversary of the Munsters premiering on CBS Thursday night. And what I'm doing is, over the years, like the story, like the introduction of how many people who love the Munsters and who grew up with the show and have fond memories of it, I've asked them to literally go old school and send a postcard. I do take emails as well, but I've been having people mail me postcards and writing down these fabulous stories of why they like the Munsters and what it meant to them growing up. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff about, you know, it was a release for me, and I ran home from school and I wanted to be with your house. I always liked family values and how they loved Marilyn unconditionally, and just a lot of good things where I built my first hot rod because of the cars, this and that. And I'm putting together a book called Munster Memories, which will come out on the 24th. It's a combination of an educational book regarding, you know, how the show was made and who was involved in it and what happened with the show and why it has a staying power. But it's also got a very big segment on stories of what the fans and the fan appreciation segment. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, GJ,
you can send a story to MunsterMemories.com. Or at the end of the deal, I'll give you an address where you can actually mail a letter.
Oh, GJ, I know you're ready. You're already starting to write it, aren't you, right as we're talking?
Well, you know me. I'm a good note taker, and yes, I did. So I was going to make sure. Because I'll tweet about it and Facebook about it as well. And
great.
And, we'll definitely get some people paying attention. And, it's exciting to know all things that you're doing. And, you know, I know a lot of times, you know, they got those shows, you know, what happened to those people from, I know Oprah does one now, where are they now? And, you know, so this is sort of like, where are they now for me and Neil? And obviously, you know, it was a great show, and, you know, so we're excited. So we'll definitely have you come back on. And once you get your show going there in Missouri, looks like I'm making a trip to Macon.
Great. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really, really a good feel-good thing, because you couldn't write a script like this. You know, it's like Eddie Munster lived in the house. His grandma owned the house. He went to California. He came back from California. His sister, her company, Keys to My Castle, was inspired by her being around grandma and all the skeleton keys that people used to use to get into these big, beautiful homes. And nowadays, you just get a little quick set, you know, a very generic, industrial-looking key. So her company makes my Woof Woof keys and my Spot keys and my 1313 Tombstone front door keys. So that's another, inspiration from the house as well. My sister, you know, she was there, I was there, and it's a feel-good situation.
Butch, this is so much fun. Now, where can our listeners, first of all, write in?
Okay.
find other information on you and all those different things again, and appreciate you coming on for sure.
Okay. Not a problem. Okay. First of all, you can just send a postcard or an envelope. I really prefer the postcards and envelopes because I like the old school feel. But here we go. To Butch Patrick, Post Office Box 145. That's in Manhattan Beach, California. And the zip is 90267-0145. Or you can email it, if you choose to do so, to MunsterMemories.com.
GJ, this was a lot of fun, and Butch, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show, and when your book comes out, for sure, we're going to have you back on the show, and I know GJ, because he lives near you, especially when this whole thing launches in Macon. I guarantee he's going to visit you in Macon for sure, right, G?
I fly into Kansas City to go over there, so we'll probably ride over together.
I look forward to that. So, again, thanks for being on the show. And, again, thanks for all the memories. And thanks for, you know, folks that are creating more memories to a lot more people. And, you know, we'll do our part to keep promoting it. And let's stay in touch. And we look forward to having you on our show again.
All right. Cool. All right. Thanks again, Butch, for calling.
Thanks, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to the Simply G Radio Show on the Simply G Media Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm really going to call this, I guess, a nostalgia week, you know, in so many ways. My favorite TV show of all time, The Munsters. I had, again, Eddie Munster on, which is so awesome. And I said, you know what, how can I top this one? Well, when I booked this at a certain time, I said to myself, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time is E.T. And I am so excited to welcome the program celebrity Dee Wallace from E.T., Cujo, and now Grimm, and speaking tour, many different things to talk about. Dee, thanks for calling.
Oh, my gosh. It's so great to be here with you. Thanks.
Yeah. I love talking about specific things. And the way I wanted to start out was talking about E.T. and the experience of E.T. because, I mean, it was just a movie that I will never forget. And I'm sure that part, people will, every time when they spot you and recognize you, they want to talk about it, don't they?
Absolutely, and the entire world calls me E.T.'s mom. And every time I walk onto a show or a presentation show, they play the theme. So it's most definitely my Wizard of Oz, and I'm happy to be able to claim that.
And it's something that will live on forever, and such a tremendous movie. So, Dee, tell me specifically how you got involved in this and for the part and stuff. Did they think this is going to be a blockbuster right off the bat?
Oh, heck no. No, we never know what makes blockbusters, you guys, or we'd have a lot more of them. And that was Blake Edwards' quote, not mine. But I was called in to audition for a film that Stephen did called Used Cars, which hardly anybody ever knows that Stephen did that film. And when I came in, he was already, of course, as he always does, he's three or four films down the pike, you know, ahead of himself. And he said, oh, my God, this is the essence of the person that I want for the mom in E.T. So fortunately, I did not get Used Cars. And fortunately, I did get offered E.T. So I never really had to go in and audition for E.T. because he'd already seen what I could do.
Well, and most definitely, and when you think about the specific role and the movie and the story, once, I guess, it went out, you shot it, it went out, and then it just became a blockbuster. How did your life change, Dee?
Well, my life changed. Certainly in the workforce, my life changed. Yeah. It didn't change who I was.
Right.
But, you know, I was offered things. I was a household name. I did incredible amount of press. All of a sudden, you know, an actress who you'd seen on television in every movie of the week started, you knew her name and you knew who she was, and I was somebody. It's so weird. You know, one project can kill you, one project can catapult you. And E.T. did that for me. So it got me out, got me started in a much bigger, more important way. And that, of course, kind of created some fear for me because I was this little girl from Kansas, and I'm going, oh, my God, I don't know whether I can handle this, you know. There's always that yin and yang thing going on. So
what's the difference between Kansas and Hollywood? Big difference, right? For sure.
You know, I know this sounds very judgmental, but I would have to say integrity. in Kansas, you're not raised to ever, at least I wasn't, question whether you could walk out of your integrity or not. You always did your best, you said your best, you spoke truthfully, you represented what was right, and that was it, and you didn't even think about it. So, I would have to say, at least in my experience, and again, your truthfulness is only what your experience is. It would have to be integrity.
Where in Kansas did you grow up, Dee?
Kansas City, baby. Kansas City, Kansas.
All right. Okay.
Went to KU, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. And
all right. Okay. We had an author on that talked about the years at Kansas. What a place. One of my co-hosts is a huge KU fan, and he grew up in Kansas City his whole life. He's an entrepreneur and now lives in...
Oh, my gosh. Tell him why.
Yeah, I definitely will.
It's a fabulous, beautiful place to be from. I would have to considerably think about going back now because my world has expanded into, what I call a broadened, view of science and spirituality and stuff like that. And Kansas is still very much the Bible Belt. Not that my beliefs differ from any of the staunch religious beliefs, but the understanding of them definitely is different.
All right, so the ET, the 30th anniversary, almost over. That's got to be cool. Again, did you guys connect for this anniversary at all?
No, we did for the 20th. Yeah, it's like, really, how many times can you bring it back out, guys? The marketing program for keeping ET alive and as vital as it has been for 3 years. Somebody should write a book, I think, just about the marketing, the long-range marketing of this movie. It's been nothing short of extraordinary, and, of course, a lot of that is the movie itself, and a lot of it is Steven strategizing and Universal. But it's not ever going to go away. It's always going to be there. Every Thanksgiving, you'll be watching E.T. and The Wizard of Oz together. It's a truthful, heartfelt message that we all know is the truth. You don't shut your heart light off. You keep it on if you're going to want to be happy. And it's just a beautiful movie that reminds you of that.
We're talking to Dee Wallace from E.T., Cujo, and also now NBC's show Grimm. And so, Dee, E.T., now we go into Cujo now. And I'm sure that a lot of the people who watched E.T. later on watched Cujo, but not maybe at the certain age. So how did that happen? Is that right after E.T.?
Gosh, was it after E.T.? yeah, I know. It was, yes, very close on the heels of E.T. I produced a play in there and did some TV. And Dan Blatt, who I had done The Howling with, then brought me Cujo. And I loved it. I thought it was a tour de force role, which it is. And I also thought... It's a great tribute to what a mother will go through for her child. That, for me, that's what the film is all about, is this enduring love and what a mother will go to protect their child. I had a mother like that. My dad was an alcoholic, and my mother just became incredibly creative in order to keep us alive and keep us fed, and actually even got us lessons because she bartered for our lessons. I mean, she did everything she could to make my life bigger and more expansive and as happy as it could be in an alcoholic environment. And so Dan Blatt just offered me the movie. He also offered Christopher, my husband, who had also been in The Howling. The three of us had become quite close friends during The Howling. And so when he called, I read it and I went, oh, I don't know about the love scene, Dan. And he said, well, we're going to offer Christopher that part. And I went, I just took a beat and I said, now you played me. You knew exactly what you were doing when you did. And he started laughing. I said, yeah, well, you can take the Kansas or the girl out of Kansas, Steve, but I ain't ever going to get the Kansas out of you. So I have to say that Cujo is the film I'm proudest of. It's my favorite film that I've ever done, largely due to the fact that I just felt like I went further than I could ever go, you know, and did it truthfully and really honored that mother-son bond thing. You know, there were 11 dogs in Cujo. They were all trained to go after toys, impeccably trained dogs. I had a kid that was beyond phenomenally talented. I was just blessed. But, man, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, that movie.
See, it's really hard in a lot of ways. Could you imagine Cujo now with so many, you know, animal lovers and very interesting. There's a big pit bull march coming up pretty soon about protecting pit bulls and the whole thing process that, you know, the killer dogs that, you know, it's based on people raising them the wrong way and training them to be fighters and things like that. I wonder if a movie like this could even be put out now with this kind of.
Oh, sure. I think it could. And I have to tell you, they'd probably do it with CGI, which would not be the same at all. And these dogs were taken much better care of on the set than I was.
Really?
No, I'm not kidding when I say that. They were pampered. They had multiple caretakers. Carl Miller, the trainer, even slept with them in the barn. Only one time was a dog, you know, when the dog's on top of me and it looks like I've knocked him out, you know, and we think we've killed him. Well, we did have to sedate the dog. There was a vet on the set. Every precaution was taken to make sure we took care of him. We did no more than if we had taken him to get his teeth cleaned, you know. But activists are activists, and they're going to make something out of nothing if they can, and something out of something when they need to.
True.
So I think there's a lot to be said for being conscious of the problems that are out there, i.e. the pit bull thing that you're talking about, and then just making a big deal because they are activists and they want to stir up something. And you see that in the politics. You see that in the money system right now.
Right.
So much fear going on out there about everything. So I just urge people to go, you know who you are and what's important to you. And make sure you research not only what the facts are, but the site you're getting the facts from.
Exactly. That's a great. And that's definitely a great point, Dee. When you're talking about, you know, E.T. and Cujo, think about this. What I've heard, a lot of these 80s films now are becoming huge in Europe. A friend of mine, Diane Franklin, talked about that and saying that Better Off Dead is getting like a huge, and the horror films she was in are getting a huge push now in Europe. So,
well, and rightfully so. I think Americans have always gone, oh, it's a horror film, so it can't be up for an award, you know?
Right.
And some of our best films in the 80s. Were in the horror genre.
Oh, they truly were.
I'm not talking about the slasher stuff we have now. I'm talking about the true horror film that has a story with characters that are built.
Yes.
And that you really care about, you know. That's not what we do these days.
I think that horror films in the 80s blow away. I can't stand the horror films now. I think that what you guys did in the 80s are just unbelievable. And I saw some of the other work. It's just like funny when I start looking at all the different things that you did, and I'm just like, wow. I mean, we could just talk about E.T. alone, but we could have a interview monthly on so many cool things that you're doing. It's just the time for both of us, as we are very busy people, we can continue to move on. But what happened, Dee? It's like E.T., heartfelt film, horror films, you throw in, you went into, and it kind of leads to, I guess, this new part on Grimm, because it's not really, I wouldn't consider Grimm horror, but I also would consider it kind of very, not sci-fi-y, but just really reminding you back to some of the types of villainous types of things and things from Grimm, you know, that it can become kind of violent, but yet also it's very, very mysterious.
Well, and it really, the premise is not anything different than when Bela Lugosi turned into a vampire.
Yeah.
It's just the special effects are a hell of a lot better.
Right, exactly.
You know, so Grimm for me is a social commentary. All of the different species in there, if you think of them as different religions, different races, different political agendas, that's what you're really talking about in Grimm, for me, is that that inability and the lack of choice to be open to what somebody else is, and the fear that they're going to kill you, and the fear that you can't communicate, and the acceptance that everybody's agenda is against yours. I mean, that's what really the species are all about in Grimm. And if you look at it that way, you get it on a whole different level, you know. And all I can say is don't miss the wedding episode. We just shot it. And it's going to blow your mind what happened.
And what I was saying is where I'm going to be the one on social media, Twitter, with my Twitter followers and my social media to be pushing out. Dee Wallace is definitely continually on Grimm, and that she's continued to do it, so that I'll even tweet out when those episodes do air. We'll have to kind of stay and connect, and I'll make sure I'm watching now, because my wife and I, we do like the show Grimm, and I think it's very interesting and very mysterious. I like how you kind of say that. So do you think you got picked for that part based on your, I guess...
I got picked for that part because they wanted somebody who was sweet and motherly and vulnerable and had the ability to turn around and bite your head off. And that's what I've done in a lot of my films. If you look at Frighteners, I go from the victim, you know, the simpy little weak victim to the killer. Hansel and Gretel, nice little lady in the forest, into major whacked out, you know, killer lady. I just have the ability to flip those sides of myself. The other thing is that David Greenwald and Jim Kalb, the producer, writers, did Secret Admirer with me years ago. And so when it came to this character, they went, oh, my God, this essence is Dee. Let's call Dee. So, you know, everything conspired to come together for me, and I couldn't be more joyful and appreciative about it. I have to tell you, Jim and David are some of the best guys in the business, and I love them dearly. They write, they give me great stuff on Grimm to do. Every actor on that show is fabulous. They love being there. Everybody loves to get up and go to the set and be together. I mean, it's just... And I get to work with Chris Mulkey, who's one of the nicest dudes in the business. I mean, I feel if I weren't smarter, I would feel really guilty about taking the money per episode. Of course, I'm not going to feel guilty about that.
As a working actor, Dee, for so long in your career, when lots of people can't stay the course, you have stayed the course. You have one of the biggest roles possible, or two of the biggest roles of your career, but you continue to stay the course throughout and continue to do more and more films. And being a working actor, from my experience of interviewing a lot of people in Hollywood, it's something that it's not the easiest thing in the world. Once you get typecast, you're typecast and forget about it, but you've been able to continue to stay that course throughout your career. So what is your character on Grimm for people that have not watched you yet?
I play Monroe's mom, and I actually have been in the episodes that have aired already, kind of the voice of reason, who ultimately is the catalyst that allows people to come together and really communicate. So that works right into the healing work that I do in my life. I mean, it was just bizarre to read this stuff and go, wow, this is what I do in a whole other area of my life. This is what I do, and I'm living it on screen through a character.
Absolutely. We're talking to Dee Wallace from E.T. and NBC's hit show Grimm, and enjoying the conversation with Dee. And I could talk to you for hours on just so many different things. You could see I'm a bag full of questions.
Well, we'll just do it again, okay?
Oh, we're definitely going to do it. So let's talk about your speaking series, because I know you're excited about that for sure. Tell us specifically what you're going out and doing with your speaking series.
Well, you're right. I'm unbelievably pumped about this. Let me just say, for people who don't know this side of me, you could call me a life coach. You could call me a clairaudience. Some people call me a healer. Basically, what I do is I'm able to go in to your energy and tell you why you're not getting what you want and what you need to turn around so that you can. And for the first time, I'm going on a speaking tour across the East Coast. I'm going to be in Doylestown, Pennsylvania on May 9th, New York at the Open Center on May 17th, in West Hartford, Connecticut at the Atma Center May 18th, Circles of Wisdom in Andover, Massachusetts on the May 20th, and Leaping Lizards in Freeport, Maine on May 23rd. And I'll be doing 3-hour seminars. And I'm not joking when I tell you that I can show you absolutely in 3 hours how to turn your life around and be happier and healthier and make more money. I've been given the answers, and I do it really well, and I'm a hell of a lot of fun to do it with. And then we're going to be doing private sessions at all those places also.
So, Dee, now you got questions. I got a bag full of other questions, but I'll keep it to a couple of them for sure. Now, how do you do this? Now, how can you change people's lives and transform people's lives in 3 hours?
I show you how to do it. It's really a very simple formula, guys. And basically, it's based on the fact that the very thing we want, we have fears and BS messages that we can't get them.
True.
And until you become conscious of that, they run you. They literally run you. I mean, for example, I can get up and work with somebody that I've never met before, and they'll say this and this and this, and the information that comes in, well, it's your mother, and it happened at 4 years old, and it has to, and all of a sudden they go, oh my God, that's when blah, 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 and we put the belief together. Once you've got the belief, then you get to reparent yourself. You get to redirect your own energy and go, you know, this is not getting me what I want, this belief. And now I've got the information, now I can turn it around. I'm telling you, it can be done, it is done in 3 hours. And then you have to go out and apply it daily to your life. If you do that, your life changes.
Well, Dee, it's definitely sounds like something that I agree with you. It's your mindset. So many times, Dee, we have a negative energy. We have an energy that we just don't fit. We feel we're going to fail. We think something's not going to work out. And if we have that thought process, it's going to. But if you have this mindset that you truly want to do something and you're not going to take no for an answer and keep going, it's kind of like your character, Dee. You know, you're sweet.
Yeah.
You're going through things. Everything's going well. But then when that roadblock comes, you just run right over the roadblock.
Yeah. And according to the information we have, and I want everybody to hear this because this is a big gem, that the result that you perceive about anything that you're attempting to create in your life, your perceived result of that is the biggest thing that gives you the result.
Yes.
So how you perceive everything's going to work out is the biggest thing that makes it work out that way.
And why is it that there's these people out there that are call themselves life coaches? Sorry, Dee. And then, in a way, and then they literally don't have that mindset for you. They don't look at that. They always look at they have a situation where they lead you to the water, but yet then they always are putting up roadblocks for you. Everyone in society does this, Dee. They say, you know, you have this dream, you have this ambition, you want to be this person, you want to not, you might want to, you know, get off drugs, you might want to get off alcohol, you might want to make more money, you might want to lose weight, and everyone puts in, well, you don't have the ability to do this, or you can't do this. And then it comes in, then the voices come in your head, and you hear it in your head, and then you go and you do it, and you don't put the action to it, and it doesn't happen.
Exactly. And what I tell my clients is that if a lot of people are saying you can't do that, they're just you vocalizing back to you that you have a belief that you can't.
Right. And they're jealous in sometimes ways when they say this, because they know you have your act together.
We're just afraid of our own power. We're really, really, really powerful. And the biggest thing we're afraid of is ourselves, really. And I can tell you from working in horror films for 40 years, I have never met a monster that frightened me more than my own shit I couldn't get on top of.
Right, exactly. So true. All right, well, Dee, where can we find information on the speaking series and then learn more about you, all the different things, social media, websites, whatever, where we can find info?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and Facebook. I'm on all of them. My website is dwallace.com. And you can pull up the May flyer, see where I'm going to be at. There's direct links if you want to sign up. It'll take you to all the different places that are close to you. You really, really, really want to empower your life and stop being a victim and be happy and, you know, enjoy sex more. Come see me, because it's an amazing 3 hours, guaranteed.
Well, Dee, thanks for calling the program. Best of luck to you with all the opportunities. We're going to definitely stay in touch and have you back on again. So thanks for calling.
Hey, I'll be there, baby.
All right, take care, Dee.
Bye-bye.
All right, you're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited to have this guest on the show, because again, I'm, as I have always said, as a former professional wrestler, I'm 6'10", but me, go ahead and fight gators? Forget about it. Wrestle gators? Never, never. And when I heard I had the opportunity to interview this guy, and I'm a huge fan of the reality television show, so I want to welcome the program from the hit TV show on Ammo Planet, Gator Boys. I want to welcome the program, Chris Gillette. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited to talk to you. So, and it's such an interesting story. We were kibitzing off air about different things, and I really enjoyed learning a lot about you off air, and I'm excited to talk to you. And I guess the first question is, why reality television? Why Gator Boys? Tell us a little bit of how that developed.
Well, myself, as well as pretty much everybody else on the show, we have a long history of years worth of working with various different animals, mainly, you know, alligators, crocodilians, things like that. And so we've all been doing this quite a long time, and we all came together eventually at Everglades Holiday Park under that setting, and we started doing an alligator rescue program there, rescuing the nuisance alligators. And so we were doing that for a couple of years now, and then somebody had some videos they sent into a couple networks, and boom, Animal Planet picked it up, and rest is history, right?
And that's amazing and wild, and who would have thought you'd ever be on reality television? So, and you said you've off-air talked about how you've had experiences of doing TV, but nothing like this, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I've worked in television a lot over the last couple of years because, let's face it, it's a very unique skill set. And so I've actually done a lot of different television work, but always as somebody who's setting up the shots or finding the animals, but never as on-camera talent. So this has been really exciting for me to actually be the on-camera talent.
And from that process of finally being on Gator Boys, how has your life changed?
You know what? It's interesting. I mean, I pretty much live just the same as I always have, and I still, you know, wrestle alligators and, you know, do that as a daily job. But it's definitely changing the aspect of, you know, going out to dinner and people knowing who you are. That's pretty unusual for me.
And those stories of going in and somebody spotting you when you're outside the park, because everyone, and we're going to talk a little bit about Everglade Holiday Park very soon, especially for people in the Fort Lauderdale area to go ahead and or going to be in Florida to check you out and check out what you do at the park. But when you're outside the park and people spot you, you have to do a double take, don't you?
Yeah, it's a very strange thing, because when I go to work, I'm at work. I realize that I'm playing, you know, the character. People come there because they know of the show, and so it's expected that they know who I am or want pictures with me or this or that because they've seen me on television, and I'm at work. Now, when I'm out at dinner, and, you know, I don't really consider myself a celebrity by any means. I mean, even if some people do, I just think I'm just a regular guy. I still wrestle gators. I still live the way I always have. So when I'm out at dinner and somebody yells my name, like, across the crowd, like, oh, hey, Chris, and I'm like, hey, stranger, who are you? How do you know my name? You know, and
that double take is just wild, isn't it? And you're like, what? Really? And then I'm sure you like talking to your fans about it, right? And then once you know that they're a fan of the show, it must be fun to talk to them about the experiences and maybe get a couple free beers out of the deal or an opportunity to talk elsewhere. It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting, you know, and I always get, you know, I literally do a double take. I'm like, do I know that person from somewhere? And I have to think for a minute. I'm like, man, have I met them before? And I just don't remember. And then, you know, they said they know me from the show. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. But it is really funny and how people recognize you. And especially, like, you know, when I'm working, like, I have, you know, the Gator Boys T-shirt on, I'll have my hat on, or I'll have, like, you know, things that identify me as an alligator wrestler or as somebody on the show. And then if I'm out, like, I've been out snorkeling or scuba diving or surfing or, you know, anything in the water where it's just, you know, you don't even have a shirt on, it's just you, and people still recognize you by your face, that always throws me for a loop, too. Because I assume people just see the shirt, and they know, oh, yeah, that's Gator Boys guy. But when people recognize you just by your face, it's, you know, That's interesting.
It truly is, and I remember the days of wrestling in Arkansas and being on TV and locally there, and people would come and say, I know who you are. They'd stare at me always, Chris, but when you know that they are whispering and saying and coming up to say, hey, giant warrior, it's like, oh, okay. But not at the scale you're at with the viewers on Animal Planet and saying, oh, I, and the stories and everything. And so from the success of the show, it has really increased the people who go to Everglade Holiday Park. So tell us a little bit about that process as well. You said that at times there's slow times, but no slow times after this television show, right?
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, I've worked at Everglades Holiday Park for about 6 years now. And, you know, years ago I used to go in and, you know, it was a pretty slow day and just kind of hang out with the gators, do a couple shows. And, you know, it's pretty relaxing. Now, as soon as I even pull my car in the parking lot, and as soon as I step out of my car, I'll see people start pointing and take out their cameras and start walking over. And I don't even get too work before people are asking for pictures and things like that. So it's it's a huge shift. And now I do my alligator shows, I mean, back to back to back to back all day long, just nonstop.
I'm sure the owners are happy about that for sure, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course, they're happy. I'm happy as well. You know, it's a great opportunity. I get to meet a lot of people and get to educate a lot of people and work with them. So I really enjoy it as well. And, you know, it's just great to be able to have that much more influence on more people to be able to teach them about alligators and about their local surroundings.
So when they are in town, and especially in Fort Lauderdale, and they want to come visit the park, what are they going to expect when they arrive?
Well, I mean, the park itself, it's within Fort Lauderdale, and it's not too far away from the airport either. It's maybe about a half hour. It's right at Griffin and 27. So if you head out there, it's really, you know, you start out in the city, you know, which you'd imagine, and then as you drive out, you can just see it becoming more and more wooded. And then once you get out there, it's just, it's the end of civilization, really. It's the demarcation between the civilized, city, and then, boom, Everglades, and we're right on the rim of that. So if you come into the park, I mean, you'll see that. You cross a little bridge, and then you are in the Everglades now. So if you come out there, you get on an airboat ride. We have some really nice captains that take everybody out for an hour-long airboat ride, sailing through the sawgrass, having a great time out there. And once they complete the airboat ride, they come back for the Alligator show that me or someone else from the show is going to be doing. And then they can come and see the Alligator show and be able to watch us handle an adult alligator. And then at the end of the show, they have the opportunity to actually pet a live baby gator. And if they want to, they can even hold them for a photo.
And this is a great family outing for sure. You see, the entire family goes to come check out this park, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, kids love it. You know, the kids absolutely love it, of course. You know, the airboats are loud and fast, and then the gators, you have snapping jaws and teeth, so it keeps the kids all entertained. And then the parents really enjoy it, too, because it really is interesting. Even if, you know, you're not as much of an adrenaline junkie, it's still a beautiful place. I mean, just the beauty that connects to all ages, and then also just the interest of it, the history of it. And so you get to be able to see that and learn about that. And so it really connects to people across all ages.
We're talking to Chris Gillette from Animal Planet's hit show Gator Boys, and we're learning about Everglade Holiday Park. And for people, that's where Gator Boys is filmed, and you can check out a lot of the guys that are part of the show, and a great opportunity to really have a fun time at the park. But one thing that Chris does on the show that impresses me so much as being a former professional wrestler is wrestling gators. Now, Chris, I told you off air, and I also told you when we started this interview, I would be definitely afraid of trying to do this. So how did you come about learning how to wrestle gators?
It is definitely a long and arduous process. I can tell you that right now. It's not something you just wake up in the morning like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go wrestle a 10-foot alligator today. Yeah, it doesn't really work like that. You know, it definitely takes experience. It takes a knowledge base behind it, and just being able to learn how the animals work and things like that. So, yeah, it's an experience, I can tell you that.
A tremendous experience, I can imagine. And like I said, we were talking off air about how to do it. And I'm like, you know, it's just it's something I guess you have to see by going and watching Animal Planet's Gator Boys to see how you guys do this, because it's definitely takes a trained professional to wrestle gators. Someone at home should not think about trying this.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, the danger is very real. And, you know, I have people say this to me all the time. They watch it on the show, and they're like, you guys, like, you make it look so easy. I can't believe you do it so easily. It makes me think that I could do it. I'm like, no, do not try that. Keep in mind, we make it look easy because we all have lots of experience. I've been working around alligators for 10 years, so I know how to do it. There's a big difference there. And so, as you know, doing real wrestling with people, you can make it look easy if you know how to do it, but go try it yourself, and you're probably going to get yourself hurt.
Oh, you're going to get hurt. And to be a trained professional wrestler, those first couple of days, it really hurts. And if you do it wrong, you're going to end up paralyzed, and you're going to end up dead if you do it wrong wrestling a gator. So definitely some fear factor in that as well, Chris. So when we're talking about the process of wrestling gators, it must be, the adrenaline must go once it's on, right? Because you gotta think fast, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, some of it is definitely just that instinctual action, reaction, but you got to keep your wits about you. You have to remember certain things. And when you're learning how to wrestle alligators, when we have people who are first learning how to do it, you have to watch the animal extensively. You have to really study them and understand how they work, what they can and can't do, where their advantages and disadvantages are, and then also understand where your strengths and weaknesses are as well. And that way you can learn how to work around the animal and be able to do things. Because he is, you know, most of them, depending on how big, or the one you're working with, will be bigger than you, stronger than you, and faster than you. He's got you beat on every playing field. So you have to know how to work around those things and be able to turn the situation to your advantage. Because if you just go in there and try and overpower a 10-foot gator, you're gonna be a dead man. You know, you're not gonna be able to do it. So you have to know how to work around them. And just like in real wrestling, there's certain kind of holds that we can do and certain manipulations that we can do with the animal to help control him. And if you don't know those things, you just try and brute force it. It's not gonna go well for you. I can promise you that.
All right, Chris. We are also the news about Gator Boys. Tell us when we're gonna see some new episodes.
Well, I don't know exactly. We have been filming a lot, and I can't say exactly when they're going to be out, but hopefully they'll be out pretty soon. We do have a lot of new episodes coming out. Now, me personally, I was in, I think, the first two seasons a lot, and then I took a break. I actually travel a lot. I'm one of the guys on the show that actually does a lot of research, and so I've been traveling Central and South America a lot. So I took a little hiatus for that, and on the new episodes coming out, I'll be back on those as well, so you guys will be able to see me back on the show, along with everybody else, and possibly some new faces too.
All right, well, fantastic, Chris. Now, for people that want to go to Everglade Holiday Park, where can they find information on Everglade and also find information on you, Chris?
Well, if they go to EvergladesHolidayPark.com, that's the for the park, and if you go on there, there are directions, and we have all the information you could really need about the park and what time to be there, how to get tickets. You can actually get tickets right there on the website, and the park itself is located in Fort Lauderdale. And